From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th ball. Tis the Law still trying to get him. Authentic, Tis the Law, here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
Coming to the 8th pole in the Toyota Bluegrass, Swiss Skydiver fighting on. Art Collector is right there. Art Collector ahead in front, a half length to the good, 16th pole. Art Collector, Brian Hernandez Jr. to win the Toyota Bluegrass.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And now they're past the 8th pole, and it is Firenze Fire with the lead. Funny Guy giving chase with Share the Ride, but it's going to be Firenze Fire victorious in the Vosburgh, 1-3.
See, there's the Devil, strikes the front of the 8th pole. Swiss Skydiver's trying hard, but she's still second. Not today for Gamine. It is She, There's the Devil, turning back Swiss Skydiver, Gamine, and all the rest. She, There's the Devil, scores in the Oaks.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Wow, how good is She, There's the Devil? Boy, talk about flattering your form. Beating Swiss Skydiver in the Kentucky Oaks, having Swiss Skydiver come back and beat the boys in the Preakness last weekend. Should be fun to see her in action in the Breeders' Cup. Both of those fillies in action in the Breeders' Cup. Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the show that launched a network. This is the Equine Forum, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you all across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and coming to you digitally with our live streaming of the, or podcast of the program. And, of course, you're listening to that through our website at horseracingradio.net. Yeah, talk about franking the form, as they say. What an effort by Swiss Skydiver last weekend at Pimlico. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. 27 days, 4 hours, 27 minutes until the Breeders' Cup World Championships return to the Bluegrass Keeneland right here in Lexington, Kentucky. The final 5 Breeders' Cup Challenge races of 2020 are set to be contested this weekend at Belmont Park. Today you have the Champagne, a win in your end for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Division, the Frisette for the Juvenile Fillies, the Flower Bowl for the Filly and Mare Turf, and the Jockey Club Gold Cup, of course, for the Breeders' Cup Classic. Tomorrow, the final Breeders' Cup Challenge race of the year, the Futurity, which is a win and you're in for the Juvenile Turf Sprint Division. Later today, you'll hear coverage of the Jockey Club Gold Cup and the Flower Bowl and the other juvenile races on tape delay. That comes your way from 4 to 5 Eastern, Sirius 219, XM 201, and you can listen on affiliates across the country and stream us at horseracingradio.net. Again, Sirius 219, XM 201, 4 o'clock Eastern. Anthony Stabile, Bobby Newman will bring you that coverage of the Breeders' Cup winning year-in races from Belmont Park. At 9 o'clock this morning, Anthony will be with me on this show to handicap all of the greatest stakes taking place at Belmont. And at 9:20, again, all of this coming up in the second half of the show, and I'll set the guest lineup for you in a minute, but at 9:20, after Anthony previews all of those races, I'm going to rewind the clock 15 years and look back on one of the more memorable performances in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, to me anyway. And that was Borrego's freakish win in the 2005 Gold Cup. I'm going to be joined by one of the owners of Borrego, Brad Scott, not only to remember that special day, but to share some thoughts on his friends John and Bo Greeley, both of whom recently passed away earlier this year. John on March 15th at the age of 54, and brother Bo, the trainer of Borrego, passing at the age of 49 just 10 days ago on September 30th. Just gut-wrenching news with both of those wonderful people. And, you know, John is somebody who was very instrumental in helping me get Horse Racing Radio Network started. He was one of my initial sponsors when he and his brother were running Wintergreen Stallion Station in Midway. Can't thank him enough for everything that he did to help me get this started. And what a wonderful person. He was also involved with creating Make-A-Wish Day at Keeneland. He was big on helping kids. I can remember when I would go out to Wintergreen Stallion Station, we would host the show from there from time to time, or I'd just go out to visit with him or see the stallions, whatever it might be. He and Jamie Hill was working with him out there at the time. And I can remember when I would go out around Christmas time, and there would be tons and tons and tons of presents that were wrapped up. And I didn't know if it was for the people that worked at the farm or who it was. So I asked the question one day, and Jamie Hill told me, he said, no, that's all of John's nieces and nephews. He loves to spoil kids. And that memory will stick with me for a very, very long time. There were so many presents. And you talk about somebody who was a great family man, a great uncle, you know, great person. But starting that Make-A-Wish Day at Keeneland was just a fantastic thing. And there were many a days that I would go out there on Make-A-Wish Day, and John's smile and his eyes would light up when he saw the kids. It meant so much to him. And then, of course, Brother Bo. I didn't know Bo nearly as well, but I did get to spend a little time with Bo at the 2008 Preakness when he and his brother John owned Trace Barrachos, who, of course, finished ninth that year, but that didn't matter. It was a celebration of everything that was good with this sport when Trace Barrachos was there. Three drunks, by the way, is what that translates to. And that kind of sounded like us at the post position draw for the Preakness that year. I had the chance to sit there at their table. That was cool. That's another memory of something I've had the chance to do since getting involved with the sport on radio that I probably would never have been able to do otherwise. And that was a cool time. But I'll look back on that freakish win by Borrego in 2005, 15 years ago. I'll do that coming up in the second half of the show with owner Brad Scott. So stay with me for that and that remembrance of John and Bo Greeley. You also have the QE2 at Keeneland this afternoon, which very well could play into the Breeders' Cup picture, especially considering the fact that, unlike most years, there's a four-week gap between the QE2 and the Breeders' Cup. Typically, it's only 3 weeks. And you have a field of nine set to go this afternoon. You have Lyle Stables' Magic Attitude, the 5-2 morning line favorite for trainer Arnaud Delacour, going to be ridden by Javier Castellano. Wouldn't be shocked at all if that's the plan for many of these fillies and mares. You don't often see that. Horses coming from that race and moving on to the Breeders' Cup. You'll get one occasionally, or one or two, but normally that's not the goal because of the fact that it's a three-week gap. Could be the goal for almost all of the contenders in this year's renewal. Also a fun night of racing at Charlestown in West Virginia tonight. The West Virginia Breeders' Classic night takes place. Nine races, first post, 7 o'clock Eastern, all highlighted by the $150,000 West Virginia Breeders' Classic, which is race 8, 10:32 Eastern time is the post for that one. That's also a field of nine, and all eyes will be on 3-5 morning line favorite, Runnin' to Love Ya. Winner of last year's Charlestown Classic, the only West Virginia bred ever to win the signature race in the state of West Virginia. And looking forward to talking with announcer Paul Espinoza from Charlestown at 8:35 Eastern time. He'll join me to preview the card and talk a little bit more about Runnin' to Love Ya and look back on that special day last year as well. And how about that stretch duel in the Preakness last Saturday? Swiss Skydiver, authentic, taking us back to 1989. Shades of Sunday Silence and Easy Goer. That's all I could think about as they were battling down the stretch. And I'm thinking, okay, at some point, Authentic's going to overtake her. And boy, she would not give in. She would not be denied. And Authentic just kept trying and trying. And we know how good he is, the Kentucky Derby winner. Maybe the horse is going to be voted champion three-year-old this year. I don't know. Tis the Law still has something to say about that. But Swiss Skydiver, she didn't care who he was. And she's now a dual qualifier. She's qualified for the Kentucky Oaks, and she is qualified for the Kentucky Oaks, for the Breeders' Cup Distaff and for the Breeders' Cup Classic. So she'll have her options open as to where she wants to go. Ken McPeak joined me earlier this week for an interview on my Trainer Talk show presented by Fasig Tipton. You can head back and listen to the entire thing on our website, but I cut out a segment from that show of Kenny looking back on that win last weekend, and some great comments by Ken McPeak. And you're going to hear that interview coming up at 9:40 Eastern time. So here's what's ahead. When I come back after my first commercial break at 8:15, I'm going to kick off the show with Michael Hernan. After 24 years at Gainesway, He is now out on his own. That's right. After 24 years at Gainesway, Michael now out on his own. He has started Michael Hernan Bloodstock and is currently the owner of Spanish Love Affair. Very talented 2-year-old filly who just finished second at Keeneland behind that stakes record performance of Aunt Pearl in the Jesmond Stakes this past week. Going to talk to Michael at 8:15 Eastern. We'll talk to him about his new endeavor. I'll talk to him about some of the success that he's had in the past working at Gainesway and even beyond that. So that comes up at 8:15. Again, 8:35 Eastern, Paul Espinoza from Charlestown. Our industry star of the week presented by Stuart Morris at 8:53 Eastern time. Anthony Stabile, 9 o'clock. Brad Scott, 9:20. And that interview with Ken McPeak coming up toward the end of the show, 9:35, 9:40-ish. A couple of other things before this first break, though. I want to give a shout-out and a special congratulations to one of the classiest guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing. That's Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez, who yesterday recorded his 2,000th career victory at Belmont Park. 2,000 wins at Belmont alone. There are so many jockeys in the sport hoping to get to 2,000 total before they retire. Johnny's won well over 6,000 races in that Hall of Fame career. And when they asked him after the race to share a memory, one of his favorite memories from winning those 2,000 races at Belmont Park, he didn't hesitate. Rags to riches, winning the Belmont is right up there, he said. It was his first Triple Crown race, and after many years of trying to win a Triple Crown race, and rags to riches, there you go, another sensational female that we've had in this sport, defeating the great Curlin, Hall of Famer. And that was in 2007. I remember it because that was our first ever national radio broadcast here on the network. I can remember bringing our pop-up tent like you would bring to a tailgate outside of a college football game. And I brought the pop-up tent. We popped it up next to the paddock. They set us up with a phone line and a power outlet. And we broadcast on about 14 stations across the country, including ESPN Radio in New York. And it was just such a surreal experience for us, and the Horse Racing Radio Network was off and running. So, yeah, Johnny, I'm right there with you. Rags to riches in 2007, a special memory for us here too. But congratulations to the Hall of Famer. He gets it. He's one of the classiest guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and he deserves every bit of success that comes his way because he works his tail off. And an update now on Tis the Law. He worked this morning at Belmont Park, according to Dave Grenning of the Daily Racing Form. Tis the Law by himself, 5/8, 101.87. Galloped out 3/4 in 115.58, 7/8 in 129.3. So it looks like a nice maintenance workout for Tis the Law, who is pointing for the Breeders' Cup Classic. All right, very busy show. I'm going to kick it all off next. I'll start it with Michael Hernan. From Michael Hernan Bloodstock, has a nice little ring to it. I'll get to that next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Mark your calendars for Saturday, October 10th, when the best West Virginia Breds in training take to the track for the 34th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics. The state bred stars will be out in full force. Dr. Feel Good, Penguin Power, and the 2019 Charlestown Classic winner, Runnin' to Love Ya, who will look to join the likes of Russell Road and Confucius Say with multiple wins in the West Virginia Breeders Classic. The 9-race card gets started at 7 o'clock Eastern. It's the 34th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics on Saturday, October 10th, here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Watch, wager, win. Celebrate the Keeneland Fall Meet by joining Keeneland Select, Keeneland's mobile betting platform, where you can watch live racing and bet from your phone or computer. New signups in October receive a special $50 bonus after you wager $100 on Keeneland Racing this month with promo code FALL20. This is on top of the standard Keeneland Select $100 signup bonus. Join today and start wagering at KeenelandSelect.com.
Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Aunt Pearl is at the quarter pole, leading Spanish Love Affair and Navratilova. Aunt Pearl chased by Spanish Love Affair, coming to the final furlong of the J.P. Morgan Chase Jessamine Stakes, and Gracia goes to third. Aunt Pearl opening up by four lengths clear of Spanish Love Affair. It is Aunt Pearl backs up that stellar debut with a victory in the J.P. Morgan Chase Jessamine for Florent Giroux. Spanish Love Affair was home second, and then Ingracia got third in a time of 1:40.86, a performance that shatters the stakes record.
Kurt Becker with the call. That was the Jessamine Stakes at Keeneland this past week, and not only shattered the stakes record, just demolished the stakes record, and did it with style, did Aunt Pearl. You heard that call, and you heard Spanish Love Affair, the filly that finished second behind her, also, if you look at it that way, also broke the track record, because the previous stakes record, not track record, the previous stakes record was 142 and change for that Jessamine. So she broke that record by about a second and a half, just lowered the mark considerably, which means that Spanish Love Affair also ran faster than the previous stakes record, but obviously couldn't run down Aunt Pearl on that particular day. Looking forward to seeing the two of them get a rematch in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf here in about a month or so. And I'm joined now by Spanish Love Affair's owner, Michael Hernan, who is out on his own now after 24 years at Gainesway. He has started Michael Hernan Bloodstock, as I told you in the open to the show. Michael, good morning, my friend. And first of all, congratulations on that huge, huge effort by Spanish Love Affair.
Good morning, Mike. Great to be on the show again, and thank you very much. Yes, Spanish Love Affair, now co-owned myself with Gary Barber and Aaron Wellman of Eclipse. They bought out Mark Cassie for the other side of the filly, and we're looking forward to the Breeders' Cup. The filly did come out of the race very well. Eight up, and she looks terrific. I was down there yesterday morning with David Carroll at the barn for Mark Cassie there at Churchill, and all being well, and if she trains well, she'll enter for the Breeders' Cup back here at Keeneland. We're hoping we get a little ease in the ground, which is likely in November, and she's a progressive filly, really improving, loves racing, and we're chuffed with her performance, and she's a good one to have in a small racing stable.
Yeah, well, you should be thrilled with that performance. Again, coming up in behind a stakes record performance by Aunt Pearl, and we'll hear more from Spanish Love Affair up the road, no doubt. Michael, you picked out Spanish Love Affair at the sale, and you were very high on her from the start. You've told that story on this show before, but you have, in your time with Gainesway, more than 2.5 decades, or about 24 years, I guess, to be exact, you have selected some really top horses. You have learned an awful lot about the stallion business and the sales business, and now you're taking that knowledge, and you're out on your own. Tell me about making this transition now. That's pretty cool.
Well, it just seemed time to turn the page. And, having spent quite a bit of time here in Lexington and through, time initially with Pedigree Associates and then a few years at Fasig Tipton, and then I worked in a bloodstock agency capacity for Walnut Green that was Russell and Richie Jones, and that all came before the Gainsway tenure. And just seemed like it's a good time. The world is changing. The business is changing. I've got a lot of European connections, obviously, and a lot of American connections. And now that I'm a U.S. citizen, which happened a year ago last July, it just seemed time to make the move, and started off in good style at Keeneland September, buying 7 yearlings, not all of them in my own name. Some are to Pinhook, so we kept the identity out of the transaction. A couple of those will go to Europe, where I sold 2 very effectively this year. And the others are partnered up to go into training here in the U.S. 2 fillies in that group who are New York breds, and that's a very lucrative program, and looking forward to racing those. And then I've brought over a filly from Ireland who bought at Goff's last October. I was over there for my nephew's wedding and found myself at Goff's sale, and next thing I've bought a horse, and she's now a 2-year-old. Her name is Sussex Garden. She was initially trained by Jesse Harrington. She won on debut at Nace and came back in stakes placed behind Mother Earth, who was 3rd yesterday in a Group 1 at Newmarket. And Sussex Garden is here with David Carroll at Churchill. She'll breeze on Tuesday. She probably needs a couple of additional breezes, and the hope would be she would race early in the meet at Churchill. And I own her in partnership with a friend from Ireland, Cormac O'Flynn, and she's a promising daughter of acclimation. We know she can run. She's shown ability. We think she'll get the faster ground over here that she needs to be effective. And she's looking well, and she's a promising filly in her own right. So have a small race and stable going, some future prospects. I hope to do some season trading going forward for next year's breeding season, which will be highly competitive, and then go to the 2-year-old sales, have a lot more latitude now, and I can essentially formulate my own schedule, and I'm looking forward to that. And it's a different time in my life, and I'm well positioned for it, and I've had, a fair bit of recent success. And then, of course, headlined by the great mare, Monomoy Girl, who I bred in partnership with Brendan and Olive Gallagher, and looks like she's in great fettle, and she's pointed now to the Breeders' Cup Distaff here at Keeneland, where, of course, she was a dominating winner of the Ashland Stakes Grade 1 as a 3-year-old. She's got real ability to accelerate on a turn, and we saw that in the Ashland, and I think you will see the real Monomoy Girl, and maybe she's a better version, which is kind of scary. She's doing terrific, and Brad Cox has done a great job with this mare, and hopefully she'll get the job done here at Keeneland, and I believe she's entered to sell at Fasig Tipton in the Night of the Stars sale. So a lot to look forward here with Spanish Love Affair and Monomoy Girl, and a new career in the bloodstock business. And it's, the opportunities are there, and looking forward to the challenge.
Michael, I remember meeting you for the first time back in 2003, 17 years ago, when I first started on radio with our friend, my late mentor, Pete Kulis. And Pete had worked with you even before that. So it's a relationship with you and Horse Racing Radio Network that goes back many, many years. And we have done countless interviews over the course of the past 17 years talking about the success of Gainesway. And one question I've always asked you was to sum up the philosophy of Gainesway that helped to make them successful. And, of course, you were an integral part of all of that success. Give me your – what is the Michael Hernan philosophy? Now that you're out on your own, Michael Hernan Bloodstock, what is your philosophy, your approach when you start looking to buy horses for clients, sell horses for clients, whatever it might be? Give me your philosophy, the Michael Hernan philosophy.
Well, I think it's pretty easy. I wouldn't buy a horse for somebody unless I'd buy it for myself. That's the way I view it. And many of the horses I've bought, Pinhooks included, I take an equity position. Now, certainly not every horse can I continue to do that with. However, that's the axiom. You know, if you believe in the horse and you'd spend your own money, you can make a recommendation. You know, if you don't feel 100% about the horse, you just simply don't make the recommendation. And I think you have to look after clients' business and their finances like they're yours. And, you know, that's pretty much how I've always operated. And, you know, when we're on the sales side, if you had a question about a horse, I think you pretty much everyone will tell you, you get a straight answer and the real story, and you feel like you're standing on terra firma. And if I can't recommend a horse, I would suggest you go get a cup of coffee or something along those lines. And, and you know, your reputation is golden. It's hugely important in life. And you only can, you know, develop it. It takes years. And then with one bad, wrong move, you can lose it. And I'm very cognizant of that. And, you know, it's important to look people in the eye and treat them fairly and honestly. And that will come back and reward you. And it's, you know, what you you reap what you sow. And so that's how I continue to feel like I'll operate. It's worked for me to this time. And it's not rocket science. And, you know, having a flair with horses and both mares I've purchased to who became really good producers and so on, and others who raced with success. I hope to be able to do that now in my own name as Michael Hernan Bloodstock.
Well, when you've thought of Gainesway for the past two-plus decades, you have thought of Michael Hernan, and now he is on his own, Michael Hernan Bloodstock. You can contact him, michaelhernan1930@gmail.com. That's michaelhernan1930@gmail.com if you want to learn more about his new endeavor, if you'd like him to be involved with helping you with the sales. Nobody better than Michael Hernan. Michael, I've got about a minute and a half left here before I have to get to our Lexus Legends of the Turf segment. But before I do, one thing I want to point out is that nobody is successful in this business or any business without working their tail off. And you are one of the hardest working people in thoroughbred racing. This is a passion that consumes you 24/7. How much time do you spend looking at pedigrees, watching replays, all of those types of things?
Well, I think it's important to do that and to be dedicated. I've always been an early riser, and but also go to bed relatively early too, because you can't just burn the candle at both ends. It won't last. But it's a day of technology which allows us to keep up with the European scene. And then once this COVID pandemic relents in time, hopefully we'll be more available to travel, and travel will be less restricted. And I see myself being based here in Lexington, but I've been able to attend sales more regularly in Europe, and I'd love a trip to Australia. Hopefully that will come to fruition. And just dealing straightforwardly with clientele and being familiar with the market, and also up to date with the bloodstock. And, you know, bloodstock has increasingly become an international commodity. And there's, you know, horses who can be placed effectively into Europe. I sent a couple of fillies over there working in conjunction with Willie Brown, and they sold extremely well this year. And I'd look to continue to do that, and then vice versa, bring a race filly or two out of Europe who may be more suitable to Europe to racing here in the U.S. And have the traffic moving that way. So it's just keeping up and keeping informed and keeping in touch with people and trying to be a good communicator and be diligent about the job.
Well, Michael, all the best. Continued success. I know that it's a home run for you. You're going to be even more successful out on your own. Michael Hernan, 1930 at gmail.com. Michael, appreciate the visit as always, and all the best moving forward. All the best with Spanish Love Affair, too, as she gets ready for that Breeders' Cup in about a month.
Super. Thanks very much. Appreciate the time, and enjoy the good racing today, both here at Keeneland and in New York. And, of course, the forthcoming Breeders' Cup will be exciting, and it's a great program, and it always rewards and the spectators. So thanks again. All the best. Bye for now.
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, enjoy the weekend. You know, I was thinking, as I was introducing Michael, I had forgotten to throw out our poll question today. And talking about Spanish Love Affair, who's a very talented two-year-old filly, finished behind another ultra-talented two-year-old filly in Aunt Pearl the other day. I forgot to throw out the poll question. And I wanted to focus on Swiss Skydiver with this poll question because I think this is interesting. I told you at the top of the show that she is a dual qualifier. She's qualified for the Breeders' Cup Distaff or the Breeders' Cup Classic because the Preakness was a win and you're in for the Classic. She won the Alabama at Saratoga earlier this year, which stamped her ticket to the Breeders' Cup Distaff. So if you owned, this is the poll question, you can go to at HRRN on Twitter or Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you owned Swiss Skydiver, do you choose to run in the Breeders' Cup Distaff or the Classic? Pretty simple. Distaff or Classic. Which Breeders' Cup race are you going in if you are the owner of Swiss Skydiver? Not an easy decision for Ken McPeak and for the owners of Swiss Skydiver. If you go in the Distaff, okay, you face the girls. That's always considered to be the easier path, especially for a three-year-old filly. But as Michael just pointed out in his interview, Monomoy Girl may be even better than she has been in the past, and she's pointing for the Breeders' Cup Distaff. So you have to hook her. She might be better than any of the male horses out there right now. So do you do that, or do you go to the Classic and have to go a mile and a quarter and do it against the boys? Now, she's already proven she can beat Authentic, the Derby winner, a three-year-old male, but now she'd have to take on older males, and she'd have to go a mile and a quarter. Tough decision. In my opinion, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. There's no easy call. I guess maybe you take a shot at the Distaff and hope that Monomoy Girl doesn't show up, and then who else is behind her? Who else do you have to beat? There's some other good fillies, but they're not Monomoy Girl caliber. I think that's probably the direction they'll choose to go. But if you own Swiss Skydiver, which Breeders' Cup race do you choose to run in? The Distaff or the Classic? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Go ahead and weigh in now, and I'll pass along the results as we move throughout the show. All right, it is time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf. When I come back, I'm going to be joined by Paul Espinoza, the announcer at Charlestown, to preview West Virginia Breeders' Classic evening in that state. It is going to be a special night tonight at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. That's all coming up right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
When experts gather to discuss the greatest American racehorse of all time, the list includes three that invariably rise to the top of the conversation: Man of War, Citation, and Secretariat. The relative merits of these three superstars may well be undeterminable in actual fact, but Citation's three-year-old campaign was perhaps the singularly greatest individual year ever enjoyed by a racing thoroughbred. Citation's 2-year-old record was 8 wins in 9 starts, the only blemish on an otherwise perfect slate. A defeat at the hands of his Calumet stablemate Bewitch when that outstanding filly defeated him in the Washington Park Futurity. Citation was named the 2-year-old of the year and ranked alongside Bewitch at the top of the experimental free handicap. At the end of his 3-year-old campaign, Citation's weight evaluation was 15 pounds greater than that of his nearest rival. Most 3-year-olds campaigning exclusively against their own age group until the second half of the year. Not so Citation. He opened his sophomore season on the track with 2 wins against older horses. He followed that success with 2 wins against his peers before suffering a defeat in a 6-furlong prep race at Havre de Grace in Maryland. That race was to Saggy, sire of the 1968 Kentucky Derby winner, Carryback. After that, Citation racked up 15 consecutive victories. Included in that skein were an easy sweep of the Triple Crown races, so easy that it was almost anticlimactic. In the 1948 Derby, Citation was such a prohibitive favorite that Colonel Matt Wynn eliminated place in show wagering in that event. Citation won the Derby by 3.5, the Preakness by 5.5, and the Belmont by 8 open lengths. After totally demolishing and completely demoralizing all the 3-year-olds, he went on to become against older horses and won the Stars and Stripes at Washington Park in track record time. Later in the fall, he proved his stamina by sailing home to a 7-length win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup over a distance of 2 miles at Belmont Park. By the end of October, there was not a single horse willing to challenge him in the winner-take-all Pimlico Invitational. That outing turned out to be nothing more than an exhibition for public benefit, a walkover in racing parlance. By the end of 1948, Citation had won 19 of 21 races at 9 different tracks at distances from 6 furlongs to 2 miles. He had been ridden by 3 different jockeys and had won or on tracks listed as fast, good, muddy, heavy, and sloppy. He was not only 3-year-old colt of the year, but also horse of the year, and on top of that, handicap horse of the year. Unfortunately, the rest of Citation's story is dotted with cases of injury and frustration. He was off the racetrack for an entire year because of various ailments. He came back to race at the age of 5 when he won an allowance race in January at Santa Anita. In his next 8 starts, he finished 2nd 7 times with only 1 win. Incredibly, in 6 straight races, he was defeated in track record time. 5 of those losses were in world record time. Plus, he was invariably giving way to the opposition, which makes that record doubly significant. Citation was nearly $100,000 short of becoming race's very first millionaire at the age of 6, so after a 10-month layoff, he did come back. He began that campaign slowly, but finally scored in the Argonaut Handicap and then chalked up a 2nd tough win in the American Handicap. Then on July 14, 1951, in his last race, he nailed down the $100,000 first prize in the Hollywood Gold Cup to attain the coveted $1 million earnings mark his owners had doggedly pursued for 3 years. In 45 career starts, Citation had 32 wins and was in the money 44 times. But that 3-year-old campaign goes unmatched to this very day. Neither Man O' War nor Secretariat campaigned at the age of Citation's later efforts, so we will never know. But Citation was indeed one of the very best horses that I personally have ever seen.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
The 2020 yearling consignments of Brereton C. Jones Airdrie Stud are loaded with graded stakes prospects once again. Their consignments at Fasic Tipton and Keeneland September include half siblings to current graded stakes horses Bell's the One, Dean Martini, and Indian Pride. as well as full sisters to Grade 1 winner Street Band, and recent Saratoga Stakes winners Speak to Me of Summer and Kariba. Brereton C. Jones's carefully developed female families are brimming with exciting updates. Airdrie Studs yearlings are raised for the racetrack. Think about it.
The 2020 Thoroughbred Owner Conference is being offered virtually November 3rd and 4th. We are committed to providing the Owner Conference in as safe and healthy an environment as possible. Experience 9 panels with expert speakers, moderators, and a keynote address. Ask questions of speakers from your home, office, or anywhere you are. Visit ownerview.com to register and be part of this important event while staying safe, healthy, and comfortable. Wherever you are, we'll be there. Visit ownerview.com today.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Runnin' to Love Ya and Diamond King slugging it out. Rally Cry is all in from third. Then Unbridled One, Something Awesome and War Story running on from behind. Runnin' to Love Ya's in front. Diamond King going to make him earn it in the final furlong. Runnin' to Love Ya trying to run into the history books. Diamond King along his inside. These two to decide it in the classic. It's the Gray Rocket. Runnin' to Love Ya. And he makes history. The West Virginia but has won the Charlestown Classic over Diamond King, War Story, and Rally Cry. The hometown faithful erupt, running to Love Ya in 150-2.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That call from Charlestown announcer Paul Espinoza never gets old. Running to Love Ya, winning last year's Charlestown Classic, becoming the first West Virginia bred ever to take the signature race in the state, and did it with style. Runnin' to Love Ya, 3-5 on the morning line in tonight's West Virginia Breeders' Classic. Of course, last year he did not fare well in this race. He was vanned off. He finished 10th and last. He was eased. Things went awry last year for him. He's hoping for better this year, but he is ultra-talented and can't wait to see him strut his stuff later tonight. Paul is with me now. Paul, first of all, good morning, my friend.
Good morning to you as well. How's your bed?
You know, you beat me to the punch on that one.
Yeah.
We were texting back and forth last night, and you said that you, because you had to call so many races late last night, that you'd be doing this interview from your bed. Are you actually doing the interview laying in your bed right now?
I can confirm. I might tweet a picture out later, but I don't know. I might have to edit that. But yes, I'm legitimately in bed doing this interview. I'm a night owl, obviously, and that works for being the track announcer at Charlestown, just since we race at night. But so, getting me up before 10 o'clock is normally a Herculean effort. It takes a Herculean effort, anything for the Baron of the Backstretch.
Boy, man, I really appreciate that, and I wish I knew, because I could have scheduled you a bit later in the show. I had an open segment at 9:40, so sorry about that, man.
Hey, man, it's funny, because I ran into none other than Larry Colmus yesterday at the Sam Huff Golf Classic, which obviously is in conjunction with Breeders' Classics weekend, and we were talking about the interview, and Larry said that he told you to make it 7:30, so you actually gave me an extra hour. But just because Larry knows my penchant for sleeping in a little bit.
Well, listen, it is going to. And I do appreciate you getting up early with me this morning. I know that you had a late night last night. Going to be another late night tonight as we look forward to that 9 race program. First post is 7 o'clock Eastern. But Runnin' to Love Ya going in the Breeders' Classic. I mentioned that things didn't go exactly right last year, and that's an understatement. But he's back and looking to get it done later tonight. Heavy favorite. How cool is this horse?
He really is, just in my, 5 years or so here at Charlestown, obviously he's, the most special horse that I've had the pleasure of calling and getting to be around. Obviously he has his mental issues. I feel like this year he's sort of grown out of some of those. He's been much, much better behaved, in the paddock and on the track and in the gate. It's been really cool to see him grow up. And, he is a horse that I feel like, you know, just because of his talent, you do a lot of things do stick out. You know, I can actually remember him being scratched at the gate as a 2-year-old, you know, just acting up. And again, you don't know how special he's going to be until the race where he broke his maiden. I just remember seeing his stride and being like, this has a chance to be a pretty serious West Virginia bred. You obviously, you know, be lying if you ever said at that point, be like, oh, this horse is going to eventually win, you know, become the first West Virginia bred ever to win the West Virginia Breeders Classic. But, you know, had a little bit of a hiccup, I guess, after a race down at Laurel Park. He won the Vincent Moscarelli, which is the West Virginia bred race for 2-year-olds. Then they took a trip down to Maryland and didn't fare all that well. And he came out of that race with an issue, and they had to, you know, basically give him off a year. And you never know how he's going to come back. And he came back, and certainly the rest is history with how he's done. And, you know, he's had to make a couple of comebacks now in his career because, as you've alluded to, with, you know, acting up in the gate before last year's Breeders' Classic, you kind of, you know, had to wonder, are we ever, you know, what did that race do to him? You know, are we ever going to get to see, you know, the run into Love You that we saw, you know, win the Charlestown Classic? And while, you know, I think that certainly his third place effort in the Charlestown Classic this year, you know, showed that he's still a serious racehorse, we probably aren't going to get to see peak run into Love You again. But I think that really, really good run into Love You is still going to be really, really tough to beat for a lot of West Virginia breds for years to come.
His main threat tonight in the Breeders' Classic figures to come from North Atlantic, who he beat last time out, beat him by a length that day. 7-year-old son of Ghost Sapper, trained by Jeff Runco, who we know is ultra dangerous whenever he sends out a horse at Charlestown, and he sends out plenty of winners there. North Atlantic, tell me a little bit more about him. Can he turn the tables tonight?
Well, and it's funny because they actually, in the first West Virginia Breeders' Classic that Run Into Love You won, those two actually were 1-2, and that was obviously back in 2018. And it's funny you mentioned Son of Ghost Sapper. Their last race in the Frank Gall kind of reminded me a little bit of a race that Ghost Sapper was in against St. Liam. I believe it was the Woodward of the race where St. Liam and Ghost Sapper finished out in the middle of the racetrack, because that's what happened to Run Into Love You. You know, North Atlantic's stablemate Penguin Power kind of carried him out around the turn, and it allowed North Atlantic to kind of sneak through up the inside. And I thought for a second that he might have a chance to get to Run Into Love You, but he found just enough late. And North Atlantic at this point in his career, I mean, there's no way you would ever turn down the chance of having him in your barn. He is just a hard knocking horse, 47 lifetime starts, 17 wins, 16 seconds, 9/3. I mean, the horse is just a four-legged ATM. But he, I feel like against, you know, horses like a Run Into Love You, he's content with maybe just finishing second or third. I know he has won twice this year, and so again, you kind of, it's tough to make the argument that he isn't a really winning. A real win machine, but I do feel like as he's gotten a little bit older, you know, he's an honest horse who tries every time, but he hasn't really shown that you know, that real desire to pass horses, you know, pass every horse, if you will. So, you know, he's a horse that obviously you're going to want to use if you're exactas and trifectas. I struggle to see a scenario where he doesn't hit the board, but I also kind of struggle to see a scenario where he can turn the tables on Run Into Love You in a race where I feel like there are going to be different, you know, dynamics are going to be more in favor of Run Into Love You than they will be for North Atlantic in this spot.
Talking with Charlestown announcer Paul Espinoza up early, joining me on this Saturday morning. Big night tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern is the first post. 9 races highlighted by that West Virginia Breeders' Classic is race number 8. That race will go right around 10:30 Eastern time. I think post is 10:32. Paul, outside of that $150,000 stake, what other highlights can you tell us about on the program tonight?
Well, we get the action started off right away with one of the few in my, you know, 5 year or so years here. I can't really remember more than a handful of 1-5 morning line horses that I've installed. And Dr. Feelgood is going to be one of those in a field of five. And he is a really cool horse as well. Another son of Fibersan, same sire as Run Into Love You, same sire as Late Night Pow Wow, former Charlestown Oaks champion. He has just been unbelievable. In case some viewers are unfamiliar with the name Fibersan, obviously you get to hear that a lot around these parts. But for other folks, they might not know, Fibersan is actually an unraced half-brother to Spitestown. And so John McKee and Cindy O'Bannon, they kind of struck gold whenever they picked him up on the cheap to be a stallion there in West Virginia. And he has truly shaped and changed the landscape of West Virginia breeding forever. He's just been unbelievable. I would argue the best $1,000 sire in the country. Again, unfortunately, he's kind of had some fertility issues here over the past couple of years, or else we might have even more Fibersons on the ground. But Dr. Feelgood, he is a perfect 9 for 9 around the 4.5 furlongs, trip here at Charlestown. He's 12 for 14 lifetime with a second. He's just a really, really fast horse. I would argue, actually, I don't even know how much you could argue the fact that I think he's the fastest, probably the fastest West Virginia bred ever. And I don't know that that's hyperbole. I feel like around 4.5 furlongs, the amount of time that he's run in the 50s for the 4.5 distance, it's crazy. And he is crazy fast. He's a little bit of a sway back, and he's just a really cool horse to watch. So he's the horse I'm, I'd say, second most looking forward to calling tonight. And again, certainly won't get a big price on him. A couple other stars throughout the evening. I feel like Jeff Runco, he has another star filly and star of night. And I think she's one that I actually was kind of disappointed that she didn't take a chance in the Charlestown Oaks. She actually ran faster that night than what the winner did, Fly on Angel, in her 7 furlong race. So I feel like she's one that I'm looking forward to quite a bit. I feel like from a wagering standpoint, tonight is going to be not exactly a night where I think you're going to get rich. I think there are some very logical favorites that I feel like even if you beat one or two of them, it'll be tough to string together, you know, 3, 4, 5 long shots on a night like tonight. But it's just a night that we look forward to here in West Virginia each and every year. Some of my earliest memories as a human were West Virginia Breeders' Classics night, because it's just it's the time that the West Virginia breds and the locals get their soul time in the spotlight. And it's just something that while this year will feel a little bit different with a limited attendance to 500 patrons, it's still West Virginia Breeders' Classics night, and it's still going to be something that just special to not only me, but everyone that's going to be in attendance.
Yeah, and you're a West Virginia bred, as you said, and Paul Espinoza will have the call tonight of all 9 races on that Charlestown program. West Virginia Breeders' Night, it's a special night for that state and a special night for everybody that's involved at Charlestown. Paul, listen, appreciate the visit, and go back to sleep, get some shut-eye. I know it's a long night for you tonight, and we'll look forward to hearing your calls coming up at 7 o'clock Eastern.
It's going to be tough after the excitement of being on radio with you, of being able to calm the nerves and go back to sleep, but we'll give it a try. I appreciate you having me on, Mike.
Appreciate it, buddy. Paul Espinoza here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kate, don't forget that it's not only Charlestown that hosts big races this weekend. You also have big races at Woodbine, north of the border. Today, you have the $250,000 Cup and Saucer Stakes on the turf for Canadian 2-year-olds. And tomorrow, the Grade 3 Durham Cup. First post on Saturday and Sunday is 1:10 p.m. And for more racing and horse player information, all you have to do is visit woodbine.com. All right, I'll be back with our Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris, and then I'll get you set for a very busy second half of the program. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti!
Gainsway stallion Caraconti, a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4 fifths. Cara Conti hails from the immediate family of leading sire King Mambo, with a top female line which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. Cara Conti's first crop of three-year-olds includes graded stakes winners Sole Volante and Kenzai Warrior, along with stakes winners Carrick, Tornasol, Katil, and Great Winner. Recently, Spanish Love Affair rolled to an 11-length debut win at Gulfstream, value priced at just $10,000. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Cara Conti at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
This is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you to join me and Bobby Newman this Saturday on the Horse Racing Radio Network for Winning Your In Action from beautiful Belmont Park. We'll bring you the Flower Bowl and Jockey Club Gold Cup live and recap the Champagne and Frisette from earlier on the card. Coverage is presented by Breeders' Cup and begins at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events, including the Breeders' Cup, at horseracingradio.net.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Star Standard turning for home, coming wide. Here comes Cigar uncorking his rally, unaccounted for third, and Thunder Gulch will be defeated today. Cigar explodes! Cigar opening up in mid-stretch. Cigar there by a length. Unaccounted for will make him work for it today. It's Cigar past the 16th pole, a length and a half lead. Unaccounted for, second best to the sensational Cigar. One of the great ones indeed. He has won 11 in a row. Unaccounted for was second. Farther back, it'll be a photo for third.
Tom Durkin with the call of the 1995 Jockey Club Gold Cup Cigar, getting the victory that day for Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott, owner Alan Paulson. How special was Cigar? Well, we all know how good he was. Of course, I tell you all the time, you never would have heard of Cigar if Holy Bull had stayed healthy. But that's a whole other discussion, which we can have another time here on the program. Yeah, Bill Mott, you talk about a guy that has had a little bit of success in this race. He wins it with Cigar in 1995, his first win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. He would have to wait until 2012 to win another, when he sent out flat out to get the victory. Won it the next year with Ron the Greek. So he goes back-to-back 2012-2013. And then today, he's looking to win it with heavy favorite Tacitus, which would be number four. Still not going to be anywhere near the record for most wins by a trainer in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. That record very well could be untouchable. It was set, and is still held, by the late Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, who won his first in 1929. He won his seventh Gold Cup in 1956. That is a record that may stand for a while. Going to be really hard to break. Going to talk more about the Jockey Club Gold Cup and that card at Belmont today with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, coming up in just a few minutes. I'll be joined by Brad Scott, the owner of 2005 Gold Cup winner Borrego, to look back on that special day coming up at 9:20 Eastern time. And then my interview with trainer Ken McPeak toward the end of the show at 9:40. Don't forget that our friend Stuart Morris, who sponsors this next segment, our industry star of the week, offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. And this week's industry star comes from Laurel Park, and that is Naomi Tucker, who you can tune in. I'm sure you've seen her many, many times on TV up there. She does a fantastic job with all of the analysis and all of the information that she passes along. She is our industry star of the week. And again, this segment presented by Stuart Morris. Naomi, good morning and congratulations.
Good morning, Mike. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you along and looking forward to hearing your story here for a few minutes. Why don't you, I mentioned the Laurel Park connection, and I mentioned all the television work that you do, and many people will be familiar with you because of what you do on the TV side of things, but why don't you talk about a couple of the other things that you're involved with too?
So I'm on at Laurel Park, and I have my own podcast as well, which has been quite a wonderful experience. Learned a lot, met a lot of people because of it, even though due to COVID, a lot of them sort of meeting online. Well, you know how what that's like, talking with them, but you've never met them before. So that podcast called Talk Racing to Me with Naomi, and it's been so much fun. And yeah, aside from that, I used to be an exercise rider. I do actually kind of miss it quite a bit. So I need to find a way to get back riding out again, because I did that for about 7-8 years across the globe. So that part I do miss.
Yeah, I can imagine. How did you first get involved with racing? Where did that love begin?
I had an Anglo-Arabian mare, so she was a cross between an Arabian and a thoroughbred. I mean, the worst cross that you could imagine. She's very feisty. She was a chestnut mare, so we all know what those are like. I ended up doing pony racing with her in the Netherlands. A lady organized it, and I came across it, and I thought, well, why not? It sounds like fun. I get to go fast. It's on the racetrack. Well, we only have one real racetrack left in the Netherlands, and it's called Duindicht. So they organized it there, and I did it multiple times because after the first time, I just wanted to go again. I got to go fast, and it was fun, and it felt like you're really sort of one with the horse. You're really doing this together. And I used to be a dressage rider and a show jumper, so this, to me, was freedom. This was way better than anything else. And the lady that organized that also organized a trip to Newmarket, of course, historic home of racing in Europe, and going there, we visited the British Racing School, the National Stud, the Gallops. I still remember seeing thoroughbreds go up Warren Hill, early in the morning with the fog, their Whitney sheets on, and I was standing there, and I was mesmerized by the horses and by this whole new industry that I knew nothing about. Horse racing isn't big anymore in the Netherlands. Apparently, it used to be before I was born. I got the chance to chat with Adrie de Vries about that. He's a Dutch jockey riding very well in Dubai. He's the only Dutch jockey I've ever heard of. And he told me it used to be on national television. It used to be big. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. So I was very lucky to stumble across England. Ended up falling in love there and deciding that when I finish what we call middle school, but I'm pretty sure it's called high school. So when I was 18 and you're ready to go to university, I decided I would take a gap year and go to England. Now, that gap year turned out to be a career in horse racing. I still got a degree, but whilst I was riding out. So, yeah, it just spiraled from there in the most wonderful way.
Did you ever picture yourself being on air as an analyst or an anchor and doing that kind of work?
Not at the beginning. At the beginning, I wanted to be a jockey. I wanted to be a jump jockey back in England. So, yeah, was riding a lot of work, spilling over fences and hurdles, traveling a lot, seeing all the race courses, and then realized I did want more. So ended up getting a degree, also breaking in yearlings for 5 years, which was how I got into the pedigree side, because you start seeing these families come back over and over again. So I'm like, oh, I rode your half-brother last year, that kind of stuff. It was amazing, and it really got me into sort of the other side, the pedigree side, form study. And then I ended up going around the sales with Gina Bryce, who's an anchor sports analyst broadcaster in England, and seeing what she did there, talking about the sales, about the pedigrees with the horses. And I thought, this is I like this. Maybe I should try and do something like this. So I started doing little segments with the camera there. They had me try it, and I was super nervous, and I think it looked terrible. But that's how it started. That's how I started to think, okay, I would love to be in broadcasting because I get to tell these stories. Because I figured out that in horse racing, there are so many different amazing stories. Everyone has their own, you know, just like I mentioned how I got into racing, everyone has their own memories and reasons why they got into the sport, and they're all different. And I feel like that was something I really liked, and I still do, especially when we covered the Preakness, just all these different horses coming into this big race, all different connections, different stories, that I love. So I found a way to maybe incorporate all of it. You know, my love for horses, I love listening to people's stories and working with them. So I figured that that seemed like the best of both worlds.
Yeah, well, Naomi, listen, you have done a fantastic job. Keep up the wonderful work, and congratulations on being named the Industry Star of the Week for this Saturday morning. I know you caught the eye of Stuart Morris. He thinks a lot of you, and really appreciate the visit here this morning. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Mike. It was nice to be on.
Yeah, nice to hear your story. Naomi Tucker, our Industry Star of the Week here on the Equine Forum. All right, busy second half of the show comes your way next right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Tis the Law's got a two-length lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, Tis the Law and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
But it's Improbable who has taken command with an authoritative run. From last to first, what a star Improbable has turned into, as he is going to romp in the awesome again.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And Honor AP runs right by Authentic, and Odor at the rail, and Rushy, a 16th to go. Honor AP a length and a half. Authentic, Rushy running on late. It will be Honor AP, a very impressive winner of the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
Tom's D'Etat shaken up to a three-length lead. By My Standards is trying hard, but he's still second. Silver Dust is third. Multiplier trying to come on late for fourth, but with a 16th to go, it's total domination for Tom's D'Etat.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you as always on this Saturday morning. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, my interview with Michael Hernan from Michael Hernan Bloodstock, or Paul Espinoza talking about the big night at Charlestown this evening, or Naomi Tucker, our Industry Star of the Week, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows. You can do that, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Second half of the show kicks off momentarily with the Big A, Anthony Stabile from New York. He's going to preview the four Breeders' Cup Challenge races coming up this afternoon. Of course, you have one more tomorrow, and that will wrap up the Challenge series as we make our way toward the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Keeneland, November 6th and 7th. Going to look back on the 2005 running of the Jockey Club Gold Cup with owner Brad Scott, who was involved with Borrego, who put in a freakish effort that year. We'll talk to Brad coming up at 9:20. And then my interview with Ken McPeak, looking back on last week's Preakness Stakes and that big win by Swiss Skydiver over the boys. That comes up right around 9:40 Eastern time. So a lot of things to get to here in the second half of the program. And without further ado, I thought that this would be the proper way to welcome in the Big A on this Saturday morning. Big A, I had to Google that. I'm not a Game of Thrones guy, but I know you are, and I know that you are now officially a lord. So, in honor of that, I wanted to welcome you in with a little Game of Thrones theme music and say good morning, Lord Anthony Stabile.
Oh, Baron, I appreciate you acknowledging my lordship. The boss, Michelle Pennant, does not acknowledge the lordship. In fact, she gives me a different kind of salute when I bring up the fact that I am a lord now. And I do appreciate that you acknowledge it. I appreciate the Game of Thrones intro. I've actually decided that my lord theme will be the Game of Thrones intro played on bagpipes. And if you think you had to Google the Game of Thrones theme, you try finding it on bagpipes, my friend.
I also learned that there have been 9 lords in Game of Thrones. I thought I would find just one. I thought there was some lord that was tied to Game of Thrones, but there have actually been 9. Is that right?
Yeah, something along those lines. The first one that would come from the top of my head would be Lord Peter Baelish, otherwise known as Littlefinger. He'd fit in right at the racetrack, Lord Peter Baelish, Littlefinger. Likes to start rumors, likes to start trouble, likes to get in everybody's business. So he would fit in on the backstretch perfectly. He also wound up getting decapitated when it was all said and done. So.
Right, right. So, okay, so for people that are going, what the hell are they talking about, that Anthony's a lord? So explain what you got involved with.
One of my best friends, Ralph Corso, came over to Phil's house one night and said, Ice Cube, famous rapper and actor, was on Facebook telling him that he could become a lord. So he went to this website. I honestly don't remember the name of the website right now. And for $80, you could buy a square foot of land in Scotland. It gives you a lordship, and they plant a tree in your honor, and it's on this preserved land, but it's legit. I have a deed with a plot number. I'm sure a lot of people out there would hope I use that plot for other reasons. I have a plot number, and it's completely legit. $80, $79.95. Feel like Earl Scheib.
Unbelievable. Lord Anthony Stabile with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, well, now that you are a lord, does that mean that your handicapping has gone to a new level, too? You're able to see things that maybe other people aren't.
I pick a lot more European horses now. Yeah, definitely. I bet some more English racing in the morning. Yeah, I do a lot of things like that. I mean, we don't have racing in Scotland, so everything. Actually, I'm probably up a few bucks since the lordship, if I'm being honest. So had a good day yesterday. The racing at Belmont's been great. We haven't been rained off the turf yet. So for today, and I know the bulk of the action, 3 of the 4 winning urines are on the dirt today, but the turf has been in great shape. We're supposed to get buried with some rain on Monday over an inch, but for the weekend, it looks like the winning urines, the 5 that are left, are all going to survive. And 2, like I said, 3 on dirt, 2 on turf. They should be run under over ideal course conditions.
All right. I was a little late getting to you here, Big A, running late with the first half of the program, so I want to get to the analysis of the Breeders' Cup Challenge races that will take place at Belmont today. There are 4 of those. We'll do that in a minute, but I threw out a poll question this morning at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, asking people to weigh in. If you owned Swiss Skydiver, do you run in the Breeders' Cup Distaff or the Breeders' Cup Classic? And right now, 78% of HRN Nation saying it's the Distaff, not the boys in the Classic. So I'll ask you for a quick answer on that before we dive into the races at Belmont Park. Which do you choose?
I'm actually surprised by that because I think people are obsessed with fillies running against colts in this country because it doesn't happen that often. I'd run her in the Classic. I do think she's a distance eater, that she appreciates more ground. Though I do believe that, you know, the matchup between her and Monomoy Girl would be a sensational one, and at this point in their careers, I would probably be betting on Swiss Skydiver. With that said, a win in the Classic gets a horse of the year, something we haven't seen from a filly in 9 years with Havre de Grace. I would run her in the Classic.
All right, well, there you go. All right, the first Breeders' Cup Challenge race at Belmont today is race number 4. It's early. It's the Grade 1 Champagne, and race for the boys that will see the winner punch their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Tell me more about that race.
Yeah, you know, it's a field of 6, but it certainly looks like it's down to a rematch between hopeful winner Jackie's Warrior and second-place finisher Reinvestment Risk. Jackie's Warrior had 2 races under his belt, including a win in the Saratoga Special going into the hopeful. He was able to get in front and control him. Joel Rosario has ridden him in both of his stakes wins. And it looks like he's going to be able to get in front today. The horse from the rail, Ambivalent, he ships in from California for Doug O'Neill, who's not afraid to run a maiden in a stakes like he's doing today. You would assume he didn't fly this horse across the country to not be a little aggressive. I just don't think he's fast enough. Jackie's Warrior should be a front. Now the distance comes into play. He won at 5, 6, and 7. He gets 8 furlongs today. The investment risk was making just his second start in the hopeful. He had to chase Jackie's Warrior around there. I think the field of 6 boils down to this field of 2, but I do think reinvestment risk can get the better of Jackie's Warrior today. Steve Asmussen also has the number 6, Midnight Bourbon. I think it's worth noting, Midnight Bourbon's run at a mile in all 3 of his starts. 2 out of that 1.5-turn start at Ellis Park and 1 last time in the Iroquois where he finished 2nd going 1 turn like this mile at Belmont. He was on top of a pretty quick pace midway through that Iroquois that got won by Sitting on Go down the center of the track. He was one of the only horses that kind of held apart on that pace. So I don't want to say it's a 3-horse race. Maybe it's a 2.5-horse race, because at the very least, this horse has 3-mile races under his belt, the number 6, Midnight Bourbon.
All right, well, the following race is a win and you're in for the Juvenile Fillies, and that's the grade 1 for Zet. 7 fillies were entered. How'd you see that one?
I think Steve Asmussen, again, a strong hand in here. He kind of has him surrounded. Joyce Rocket's a fast filly, and she's a versatile filly. Broke her maiden in a slop, won a little stakes race up at Woodbine on that Tapita surface, got beat a length and a quarter to a really nice turf filly in Toby's Heart. The filly that ran 3rd in that Bolton Landing last time went out and beat the boys in California in her subsequent start in the Speakeasy and punched her ticket to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. So Joy's Rocket should be in front of these horses, and I think that helps set it up for Cantata, who was visually one of the most impressive 2-year-olds we saw at Saratoga. Daughter of Medaglia Doro is going to stretch out to the mile. She did win going 6.5, so I don't necessarily worry as much about the stretch out as I would ordinarily, say it was 2 turns or a little bit further. But at the mile, I think she's going to be tough. Day out at the office, won the Skylerville at Saratoga in her second start. Trainer Timmy Ham, who's not a household name, but Timmy does a really, really good job in the middle of the country. This break was planned. There was no issues with her. He planned to give her a little time, maybe have a fresh horse for the fall. You know, he worked her sparingly throughout the summer, and then you saw the last 4 works at Thistle Down, where she's based, kind of got her going a little more. I think she's interesting. She's an Into Mischief out of an Indian Charlie again, with a win at 4.5 and a win at 6, stretching out to a mile today. And V-Quist for Rob Reed. Louis Saez, the hottest jock in the world right now. She broke her maiden in the Grade 1 Spinaway last time out. I think it's those 3 fillies in the Frisette.
Yeah, that's race number 5. Races 6 and 7 are maiden special weight events, and then the next challenge race is race 8, which is the Grade 1 Flower Bowl Stakes, and then followed by the Jockey Club Gold Cup is race number 9. Both of those races live on our coverage this afternoon, 4 to 5 Eastern. Anthony and Bobby Newman will take you through those races, 4 to 5, Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. How'd you see the Flower Bowl, Big A?
Chad Brown has won 6 of the last 9 runnings of the Flower Bowl, and that's a record. And he'll try to add on today with a 3-headed monster. And I like Cambier Park a lot. You know, when you have fillies in the barn like Uni, Sister Charlie, Rushing Fall, Newspaper of Record, a 2-time Grade 1 winner like Cambier Park can get overlooked a little bit. I have never overlooked her. I've always thought she was a really nice filly. She got a terrible ride last time in the Canadian, her first start in 11 months. She only got beat 4 lengths. She tired late. That's that big E.P. Taylor, one turn mile and an eighth. I mean, that's a real grueling test, especially off the break. She comes back now. She's got a couple of solid works up at Saratoga. One at Saratoga. Actually, both at Belmont. She actually shipped back straight back to Belmont. A couple of works at Belmont. I think she's going to be tough today. My sister Nat, who is Sister Charlie and Sotsass's, the middle sister, I guess. Sister Charlie 6, Sotsass 4. So my sister Nat fell right in the middle. She better start winning some of these Grade 1s to keep the family name true and proud. I think she can win. And Civil Union, in fact, Shug McGee, Civil Union, Allen Stable, the Green and White, they won this race a few years back I can't remember her name now. But she was another from this family. And she stopped Chad from winning six in a row. So it would be funny if this would be the one. I think the other three, the other Chad Brown horse, Nay Lady Nay, comes in from a series of races at Churchill, Monmouth, and Laurel, having won the last two. She'll step up and try to big girls today, but I think it's going to be a Parks race to lose.
All right, and in about a minute and a half or so, Big A, do I even have to ask who I think that you're going to pick in the Breeders' Cup Classic, the Jockey Club Gold Cup today?
How many times do you think I could say Tacitus in 90 seconds?
Yeah, I know. I knew that was coming.
But the truth of the matter is, if one of the three-year-olds step up, if Happy Saver from the rail steps up, and I think, you know, last year Robert Ortiz Jr. and Todd Fletcher teamed up with another three-year-old, Vino Rosso, who crossed the line first and was disqualified. They rode him aggressively last year, and this horse certainly looks more tactical than Vino Rosso ever did before the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Race doesn't have any speed in it. I would imagine they're going to try and pull another robbery from the front end. Gerard Ortiz Jr. did it in 2017 with Diversify, so I would imagine that Happy Saver tries to pull it on the front end. Mystic Guide really improved in the Jim Dandy with the blinkers last time. It was the kind of horse that was running in spots, and it looked like he needed a pair of blinkers. They worked. It was the best race of his life. But let's be honest, Tacitus is supposed to sit the same trip he sat in the Suburban right off the speed, gobble him up, and get his first Grade 1 win, very elusive Grade 1 win, and punch his ticket to the Classic.
Oh, there he is. He is Lord Anthony Stabile, and he is my guest here on the network this morning. He'll be with you this afternoon, 4 to 5 Eastern time, for our coverage of the Jockey Club Gold Cup and, of course, the Flower Bowl. You'll hear the Champagne and Frisette on tape delay as well. Lord Anthony, it's been a pleasure, my friend. Enjoy
Baron,
the day at the races.
If anybody knows about royalty, it's certainly a Baron. Everybody have a great and lucky day. We'll be on the air. Bobby Newman is going to join me. Look forward to a bonus day of Bobby and the Big A, as I like to say. 4 to 5 today for coverage presented, of course, by Breeders' Cup. And we'll try and pick some winners and wrap up this challenge series.
All right. Appreciate it, buddy. You know, Lord Anthony said that he is up money since becoming a lord. And I have to tell you, since I became known as the Baron of the Backstretch back around 2003, I am down a lot of money. So it hasn't worked out for me. Hopefully it works out better for the Big A later today. All right, going to get to another break. When I come back, we'll turn back the clock to 2005 and remember Borrego and his connections. We'll do that with owner Brad Scott right after this on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
World-class racing is back at Santa Anita, and although we remain closed to the public, fans are encouraged to follow Santa Anita's live video stream free of charge at santaanita.com, and you can also watch and wager via firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Fans, please note we will be open for special holiday racing this Monday, Columbus Day. On Saturday, California-bred fillies and mares will compete in the $100,000 California Distaff Handicap. On Sunday, cowbreds will again be center stage and the $100,000 California Flag Handicap. And on Monday, two-year-old fillies go 6 furlongs on dirt in the $75,000 Anokia. And be sure to catch Santa Anita's pre-race handicapping seminar featuring track announcer Frank Miramati and host Tom Quigley an hour and 10 minutes before first post time each racing day at santaanita.com. First post time this Saturday is at 1 o'clock. Please check our website for post times on Sunday and Monday.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Grade 1 winner and track record setter Lee. Like their sire, his runners have excelled on both dirt and turf, including these standout performers.
Setting the mood as she draws off to win by as much as she wants. Gibberish for E5 Racing Thoroughbred. She won by 5 in the end.
With juveniles selling over $400,000 and yearlings bringing up to $650,000. The sky's the limit for this promising young stallion. Lee, standing at Claiborne Farm.
I'm 3-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I'm listening to Horse Racing Radio.
You
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Borrego catapulting past the field. A wild move by Borrego. He's opening up by 5 lengths as the field comes down to the final furlong. Suave is second. Grand Reward is third. Florelli toiling. Imperialism, Sun King. Borrego just blew them away, and he is in hand for the final furlong. He walked home. He won that easily. What a day for Garrett Gomez. Borrego was sensational. Suave finished second. Sun King was third, and disappointments farther back.
Wow, what a day that was. 15 years ago, 2005, Borrego, Tom Durkin with the call. One of the great Tom Durkin calls, in my opinion. Just fantastic. So exciting. And Borrego really did. He took your breath away with that move, and nobody knows that better than owner Brad Scott, who was involved with Borrego and that special day. And he is with me now to look back 15 years ago. Brad, thanks for taking the time, my friend.
Mike, thanks for having me on this morning. Just listening to that was pretty exciting still. Love it.
Yeah, when you were listening to that, what things were going through your mind?
Well, it just kind of took me back to that day. I mean, I can't believe it's been 15 years, and you know, getting to experience that day with my good friend Bo Greeley and Dr. Lake Bo Greeley, and just remember exactly what went on. I mean, it was Bob McCann was there with us, and all kinds of friends from Lexington, and I just remember the biggest thing when he started saying that Borrego was making a move. And I just remember looking at Bo Greeley, and he just threw the form up in the air and said, "Let's go to winner's circle. We're going to win this thing." I said, "Bo, it's not even halfway over." And he said, "I don't care. We're going to win it." And that was pretty impressive for him to call it that far back out of the race. And after that, it was history. I mean, just listen to that, I play it all the time. I still do. Still play that all the time.
Yeah, that was my next question. I was going to ask you how many times, even today, that you'll go back and show friends or watch the replay yourself and kind of relive that memory.
I do it a lot. Not as often as I should. I do. Even before that, we won the Pacific Classic, I think 3 weeks before that race. And we're on a good row, and I go back every now and then and watch both of them in a row. And it was what an amazing run that I was able to be involved with that family and friends. And my son and I watch it more than anybody together. But my daughters and I were out at Keeneland yesterday, and I think my youngest is getting the fever, so I might show her tonight and bring it back up this afternoon and see what she thinks about it.
You know, Brad, one of the cool things about this game is that you can be involved with a horse that, you know, at first may start out not to be that caliber of a racehorse, but then all of a sudden they can blossom into something special. And you had the privilege of being involved with a horse that earned more than $2 million in his career, multiple grade one winner, all of these types of things. So if you were if a new owner were to come to you and say, "Hey man, I want to get involved. Tell me about that run with Borrego, or tell me about what it's like being an owner with a horse like that." What do you tell him?
I tell there's no better experience, no more thrill of life. We got real lucky with Borrego. We tried to sell him, I think, twice or three times, and we're not very lucky at all with any one of them. And we sent him down to the 2-year-old in training with a person down there in training for the sale. And when he came back, we were all out watching him work out in the morning before the sale. And I remember Mr. Greeley, who always is a person to want to sell, saying, like, "Guys, I don't know that I would sell this horse." And that kind of perked us up. Because at one time we didn't think we had much, but like you said, they all grew and changed, and he grew up to be one heck of a horse. And we started knowing that when the first race, when he broke his maiden, was after the Breeders' Cup, I guess 2003, and they had the fires going on out there. But we ran the main special weight, and we beat several horses. And I don't forget, Fog City Stable guys were there, and they said, "If this is our Derby horse, we're going to go to the Derby with this horse." And Borrego beat him by like 10 lengths or 5 lengths. And the guy looked best. I mean, y'all got something special there. So after that, Bo just did a good job with him. And, man, we had a ride, and it was great.
Yeah, spectacular ride. And you mentioned Bo Greeley. I talked about this at the top of the show. It's been a gut-wrenching year for the Greeley family, losing Bo's brother John first on March 15th this year. He passed away at the age of 54. And then Bo passing away just 10 days ago, September 30th, at the young age of 49, and I know that you were probably closer with Bo than you were with John. I was the opposite. I was closer with John than I was with Bo, but I got a chance to be around both of them. Wonderful people. They did so much for their fellow human beings. They did so much for the horse industry. When you think back on Bo and even John, what are some of the things that come to mind, Brad?
Well, those guys really were incredible. Both of them got us involved. You know, a lot of our friends. In fact, we were sitting around the other night just thinking about and reminiscing about those guys and, you know, what they did for us as far as our college friends and people that weren't in the industry that got in through them. And they included us on everything, took us to places we shouldn't have been. I mean, they were just so generous and great guys and big-hearted people that didn't care who you were or what you came from or what you did. They were just excited you liked the horse business. And anybody that wanted to be involved, they were just great people to be involved with. And we miss them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I said the same thing at the top of the show. I remember John and going out there to the farm at Wintergreen Stallion Station, and he would have all kinds of presents around the holidays for his nieces and nephews. He was a great uncle. He was involved with Make-A-Wish Day at Keeneland and was instrumental in getting that started because he loved seeing the smile on the kids' faces. And I know that Bo had that same big heart. He was cut from the same cloth.
No question about it. No question about it. Both those guys were genuine people. And all they really wanted is everybody to have a good time and wanted everybody to have fun with that industry. And you know what? They did. They got a lot of us involved and still involved to this day because of those guys and the
family. They put us in touch, Brad. They if it wasn't for John, I would have never gotten a chance to meet you. I remember when you had Rossi's, and
right.
I would come in with John, and we'd hang out in there, and that's how I got to meet you. And now you still have, what, is it three restaurants that you have here in Lexington now?
I do. I still have A.P. Suggins Barn Grill, the Tulip, and the Boulevard Grill. And, you know, we've been lucky through this whole pandemic thing. Our customer base has been really good to us, and we're just, you know, employees have been working hard, and we've just, you know, we're doing our best. So it's tough times, but we're getting through it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can tell you, I miss Rossi's. That was one of my wife and I. That was one of our favorite restaurants in the world.
That was a good time. It was good. That was back when all this was going on, and the just the scene back then, and the, you know, the energy that we had over there with everybody coming in out of town, and Bo coming in, and John and everybody getting over there. It was a great time. I miss it too. And I know Chef Rod moved on, did his own thing in Georgetown, and I'm sure he's doing just fine. And you know, just gonna move on, you know, Mike, and do other things.
Yeah. Well, Brad, listen, I can't thank you enough for spending a few minutes here this morning looking back on Borrego, sharing your thoughts on Bo and on John and some very kind words there. And they'll be missed. Borrego and that run will never be forgotten. It was special in 2005 for you and the team. And really appreciate the visit this morning, my friend. Thank you so much.
Mike, thanks for having me on. I think I'm going to have to watch it again here right now. Thank you.
There you go. Go watch it. Brad Scott here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget all of our interviews on the program brought to you every single week by Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at embracetherace.com. Another good interview coming up next. It is Ken McPeak, who joined me on Trainer Talk this past Wednesday. You're going to hear about 13 minutes of that particular show that I was able to cut out with Kenny talking about winning the Preakness with Swiss Skydiver last week. That's next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Mark your calendars for Saturday, October 10th, when the best West Virginia breds in training take to the track for the 34th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics. The state bred stars will be out in full force. Dr. Feel Good, Penguin Power, and the 2019 Charlestown Classic winner, Runnin' to Love Ya, who will look to join the likes of Russell Road and Confucius Say with multiple wins in the West Virginia Breeders Classic. The 9-race card gets started at 7 o'clock Eastern. It's the 34th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics on Saturday, October 10th, here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
Discover the thrill of affordable race ownership with My Racehorse. My Racehorse features multiple horses at tracks coast to coast trained by top trainers like Todd Pletcher, Bob Baffert, Steve Asmussen, and Linda Rice. My Racehorse provides you with exclusive owner updates, and all earnings are paid directly to your online account. Get started now for as little as $65 at MyRacehorse.com and the free MyRacehorse.com app. My Racehorse is offering securities only through the use of an offering circular for this part of the offering statement qualified by the Securities and Exchange Commission under Tier 2 of Regulation A. A copy of the offering circular may be obtained at MyRacehorse.com.
Adina Springs bred and raced Dawson McGinn's best son in Horse of the Year and Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper. Now one of the most consistently brilliant sires this century, producing 11% black type winners, 6% graded winners, and 17% black type horses, highlighted by 12 grade 1 winners, 8 millionaires, and 5 champions. Adina Springs also bred and raced Ghost Sapper's best son, champion, multiple grade 1 winner, and Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic grade 1 double.
It's going to be a photo finish!
Shaman Ghost out towards the middle of the track. It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Believe in the first Shaman Ghost yearlings appearing at the sales this fall. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Three quarters up in 111.24, and they're into the stretch, and it's Swiss Skydiver, the filly, and the Kentucky Derby winner Authentic. They are nose to nose as they arrive at the final furlong. Swiss Skydiver digs in at the rail. Authentic on the outside, these two putting on a show. The Derby winner and the filly. Swiss Skydiver inside, Authentic outside. Swiss Skydiver, I think she did it. Authentic was with her on the wire in the Preakness Stakes. The final time was 1:53.1.
Yeah, fantastic. Larry Colmus with the call on NBC. Of course, you heard that call right here with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network as part of our coverage as well. What a performance by Swiss Skydiver. And how about Robbie Alborado? Congratulations to Robbie, a guy who hadn't been riding many winners of late. And when the deal fell through with Tyler Gaffalione, Ken McPeak started making phone calls, and Robbie Alborado was the guy that he chose. It was the right decision. He made a move at the top of the stretch, which was the winning move, and he was able to hold off the Derby winner Authentic all the way through the stretch. What a battle that was this past Saturday in the Preakness Stakes. And earlier this week, I had a chance to visit with Ken McPeak on my trainer talk show, which is presented by Fasic Tipton. You can hear it every Wednesday night from 6 to 7 Eastern. You can also go back to the website and check out the podcast. But Kenny talked about that win, and I started by asking him, hey, look back on that day, on that stretch battle. Tell me what it was like.
It was awesome. You know, you never know whether they're going to hold on or not. And, you know, Robbie just did such a magnificent job pacing her and getting her nice rhythm. We talked about letting her go 48 seconds the first half mile, and then from there, you know, letting her out. And, you know, the hole opened for him. He was able to find his way through there and then it's really cool stuff. You don't get that many opportunities. And we've kind of knocked on the door in some of those big ones, and it's nice to actually hit the wire first.
What was it like for you watching her battle down the stretch and not knowing if you're going to get there? Put me there with you. What was that like for Ken McPeak?
Well, when she turned the corner, I thought she was going to draw away. And in a sense, she did, except, you know, Bob's horse, Authentic, kept coming at her. And even at the eighth pole, I was like, oh, hold him off. Come on, girl. Well, Robbie hadn't pulled the stick yet, and he had actually waited. He talked all week, probably Friday, he said, I don't think she's a filly that wants to be hit. And what I've watched of her, you don't have to hit her. She'll do the work. And he ended up, he said he lightly tapped her one time the last 16th of a mile, and that was enough to hold him off. It would have been gut-wrenching if she had gotten outrun that last part of it, but it worked out.
You did an interview before the race last week, and thank you for taking the time to do that interview, too. You did it with Bobby Newman and Anthony on our race day show, and you talked about the decision to go with Robbie and how things kind of fell apart with Tyler Gaffalione and the commitment issue that you thought you had a couple races committed from Tyler. That didn't work out. You end up with Robbie. Do you kind of feel like sometimes, Kenny, there's a greater power at work here that kind of guided you in that decision?
Yeah, there's no question. Robbie needed a break, and how that unfolded, I'm still not happy about the way it unfolded, but I'm happy about the way it ended. And, there was a real – I mean, Robbie and I, even if she had been fourth or fifth this week, we had a good time up there. We spent time with the horse, and I was number one hot walker all week. Robbie was number one exercise rider, and he would hold for a bath, and I would hold for a bath, and we were helping set feed every day. And, you know, it brings me back to when I started, when I only had a few horses. And today I'm looking at a board here that's got over 80 or 90 horses that I have to worry about every day. So the actual one-on-one with her, I think, was really good for everybody. And it would have been a rare situation that I would have been able to get a jockey to come get on her every day the week going into the race. But because Robbie's business had been on a downturn, he was wide open to go. So, yeah, it worked out well, and we really took a negative and turned it into a positive. I'm extremely proud of that.
Yeah, I was looking back. I couldn't believe this, actually, that it was 18 years since your first classic victory in the Belmont with Sarava, and you come back and win with Swiss Skydiver in the Preakness. 18 years. I couldn't believe it was 18 years to Sarava.
Yeah, you know what? If you'd asked me it would have taken me that long to get back in there, I would have thought, we kind of knocked on the door. I've had some horses run well in some big races. We were third in the Belmont with Adigan. We were third in the Preakness with Senior Investment. We had a couple of fourths in between there and the Preakness. The Derby, I haven't gotten any closer than Tahana Run in 95. But we've had some horses that were on the fringes and won some of the prep races. And, you know, things got to come together for these things. And it's all about timing and obviously good horses. And, you know, maybe this opens the door for even more. Who knows? But right now we're just going to enjoy the one we got.
Talking with trainer Ken McPeak here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. His first career win came October 27th, 1985 at River Downs. And now he is sitting here closing in on 2,000 career victories. He'll get there before too long. And he's now a two-time classic winning trainer. Kenny, like you said, the only thing left is that Kentucky Derby win and maybe a couple of Breeders' Cups under your belt. Who knows? Maybe you pick those up this year.
Yeah, you know, we've run really well in some of the Breeders' Cup races. I think we've been second, third, and fourth 18 times, somebody counted, wow. and a modest number of starts. So, you know, that's one of those things. That, once again, we've had horses run really well and get beat necks and half lengths and that we're just going to keep at it until we knock it down. I think it took Bobby Frankel 40 starters to win a race, somebody told me once. And I think Clements fought through those too. So it is what it is. We've made plenty of money running in the Breeders' Cup. We just hadn't won the big cigar.
How much different is Ken McPeak as a trainer now as opposed to all those years ago when you first started and even maybe with Tejano Run in 1995?
You know what? I think I'm in a really good place right now. The sabbatical that I took in 2005, I think, was necessary to get some clarity. My wife right now, Sherry, is a wonderful asset. She's someone that actually she says, run them, Kenny. You shouldn't just keep them in the barn. She says, run them. They're athletes. It's okay. And she's right. She's an athlete herself. We've got beautiful young daughter. My whole setup is fantastic between Magdalena and Lexington, got a home in Louisville, which keeps me at Churchill Barnmore, and then we've got the training center at Summerfield. I didn't have all those assets years back, and we farmed them out, per se, to other people to either be broken or to laid up. And the whole team is fantastic. I've got some of the most experienced assistants in the game. I've got guys that have 35 and 40 years experience training horses. It's invaluable. I can't do that. I can't do any of this all by myself. So I learned to let go of the things that I need to let go of and control the things that I need. And when I was younger, maybe I tried to control too much. And so you learn as you go.
Yeah, and it's not just about the team, Kenny. It's about good owners and relationships that you establish with them, too. And owner Peter Callahan, who is the owner of Swiss Skydiver, is somebody who has been by your side for a long time now. Talk about that relationship.
Well, Peter's like a father figure to me. He's a guy that trusts my judgment. And, you know, we've had some good runs together. We had Beautician, another second in the Breeders' Cup. We've got a list of other horses we'd had for him that were high-quality stake horses, but we hadn't had that signature horse, and we actually had what I'd call a slump. I mean, we had 6 or 7 years where it seemed like we couldn't come up with a good horse, or we'd get a horse of that talent and it got hurt, or we have one that had a breathing problem or no talent. There was, and that's part of the game, but he accepts those parts of the game, and he doesn't pout. He doesn't move to another guy. He just says, just keep working hard. We'll get it. We'll get it. He actually encourages and enforces you to work harder, and that's easy for a man like him. He understands how to manage people, and I'm just thrilled that it's his filly. And there's some other people that I work for that are fantastic, too. I mean, between Harold Lerner, Scott Leeds, Tommy Lewis, I'm sure I'm missing a bunch of them. Paul Fireman is a absolute peach of a man, wonderful guy there. The Mackens I've got horses for. I could go on and on, all the nice people I work for. But the truth is that if they weren't nice people, I wouldn't work for them anymore.
You know, I remember when you first joined me on this show years ago, you told the story of your first job on the track, that it came, if I'm not mistaken, after a night of partying following your final college class. How much partying did you do after winning the Preakness?
We were pretty well hungover on Sunday morning. I'm not going to deny it. My wife and I had a great time. We all went out dancing a couple locations. I guess we violated maybe a little social distancing that night. But you know, it was what it was. We were surrounded by a lot of good people. Robbie was there and his wife was there and some others from Fasic Tipton. And, you know, we definitely had a good time.
The other story you told me years ago was about your grandfather who took you to the races at Keeneland. I think you told me you were about 8 years old, and you could even remember holding on to his tweed jacket at the windows. What do you think your grandfather would say if he could see all the success you're having now?
No, he was a really quiet man. He, hard to say, but he probably would have bet on her. And, that was a great memory, going to Keeneland back then. And, you know, learning how to read a pedigree and reading the form and program and things like that. If I hadn't grown up in Lexington, I don't think I would have. I mean, certainly I feel fortunate to have grown up in Lexington because we're right there in the center of it all, and didn't necessarily come up under a horse racing family at all, for that matter, far from it. But the bug caught me at a young age, and my grandmother would take me to ride ponies at Keeneland when I was a kid, and my dad taught me how to look at a pedigree by the time I was a teenager, and went to work on a farm when I was a teenager. It's just really, you know, some people's life aligns, and I'm going to tell you mine has.
You know, if you ask people, just a casual racing fan, especially right now, who the best trainer is that they've seen or the best trainer in the game, there will be some people who may go ahead and say Ken McPeak, especially because of the role that you're on right now. How about for you, if I ask you that question, who's the best trainer that you've had the chance to be around or get a chance to watch in this game?
Well, certainly Bob. You know, Bob Baffert has evolved out of, you know, a kid from Arizona. I mean, he's got great touch with a horse. He has great respect. Even after we beat him the other night, he petted Swiss Skydiver, and he's got great respect. He's not, people think, oh, he's arrogant. No shot. He really is humble. He's a really decent guy. You know, Wayne Lucas has had his period, and I think the changes he made in the game have been, you know, dramatic and brought it to another level. But Bob's got a great touch with the horse. That's why he's won all these Triple Crown races. And he will admit, I mean, I ran into him in Dubai three seasons ago, and he brought Arrogate over, and we were in the bar next to him. And he's like, Kenny, it's unbelievable. They're bringing me all these horses that can fly. He said, I just can't believe every year I'm getting these. So he really understands that this is not a given. And he's respectful of the fact that these good horses are coming to him, and he handles them correctly. And yeah, he's like all of us. Some of them get hurt. Some of them can't breathe. But when you get a good one, he knows when to pull the trigger. And, yeah, he's got my respect.
When you think back on your career and everything that you have been able to accomplish, Ken, what's the one thing or maybe the couple of things that you're probably most proud of?
As you evolve as a trainer, okay, so I started training in 85, and there were those that kind of pigeonholed me as a Turfway Park, Ellis Park trainer, and then I said, okay, I got to work hard or get better horses to overcome that. So by 95, we had a Derby horse, or 94, we had a Breeders' Cup horse, and then he was lucky. He got one good one, but then by 2000, we had She's the Devil Do, and 2001, Take Charge Lady shows up. So just the journey of all that, you can get a good horse once, but to be able to do year after year, or at least every few years, you've got to get a really good horse to keep people remembering, hey, you're here. And I'm proud of that. I figured out a way to do it. I'm actually going to tell you that what I learned about reading pedigree and looking at horses, and I can take a photographic memory when I come. I can remember almost every horse I ever trained, how they walked, how they moved, who they were by, who they were out of, things like that. I think that's a gift. And I've been able to apply it to what I do. And it's ridiculous. I get paid to do this. Sometimes I go, oh, my God, I get paid to do this. And I think that pattern or passion is it's helpful. It helps.
Yeah, that's trainer Kenny McPeak, and some interesting comments from Kenny, and a very candid conversation there, too. You can hear the entire interview again on our website, horseracingradio.net. It is part of my trainer talk show this past week, that show presented every Wednesday by my friends at Fasic Tipton, and I appreciate their support. It's been a show I've been doing now for about 8 years, 9 years, I guess, and trainer talk has become one of the most popular shows that we have on the network because of conversations like that with people like Kenny McPeak and Bob Baffert, who he mentioned has to be one of the trainers that, you know, he would look up to and one of the best trainers in the game today. And that's not earth shattering. That's not breaking news. We all know Bob Baffert, Hall of Famer, is one of the premier trainers, if not the premier trainer in the sport of thoroughbred racing today. All due respect to guys like Chad Brown. He's another one. And Chad's been on that show with me. But everybody has their story. And Kenny has his own story. He wasn't, when he first got into the game and started training horses, he wasn't the Ken McPeak that we know today. He didn't have this caliber of horse. He was training at Turfway Park. He was competing in claiming races, which he really doesn't do anymore. And he's worked his tail off, and now he is in a position to have saddled a winner of the Preakness Stakes. He won the Belmont with Sarava all those years ago. And he's now saddled more than 1,700 winners in his career, countless graded stakes winners. The one thing, maybe two things, missing from his resume, as he talked about, a win in the Kentucky Derby, which he was close with Tejano Run, who finished second back in 1995. But he's missing that one. And he's missing a Breeders' Cup win, which, when you think about it, is really somewhat inconceivable that Ken McPeak would not have a Breeders' Cup victory on his resume. He's had 6 runner-up performances in the Breeders' Cup. Countless thirds. Maybe this is the year he breaks through. And I posed the poll question this morning at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. So many of you have taken the time to comment and to vote, and I appreciate that. Keep them coming. But I asked you, if you owned Swiss Skydiver, do you run in the Breeders' Cup Distaff or the Breeders' Cup Classic? Which one are you going to choose? And 76% of HRN Nation now saying it's the Distaff over the Classic. Go against the girls. But I told you, if you go in that race, you have to hook Monomoy Girl. She's a monster. She might be better than any of the boys that are out there right now. She's that good. You have to hook her in the Distaff. So do you go to the Classic, take on not just Authentic, but Tis the Law, and older males that are going to be going in there, and go 1.25 miles? Not an easy decision. There are no easy spots in the Breeders' Cup, let's face it. But that decision, and especially considering that she's a dual qualifier, she can go in either one. I mean, she could do it anyway, but she's won the Alabama at Saratoga, which gets her into the Breeders' Cup Distaff, and she won the Preakness, which gets her into the Breeders' Cup Classic. It's a tough call. I almost think you go in the Distaff. Now, my logic on that is that if you go in the Distaff, and Monomoy Girl breaks a step slow, Monomoy Girl isn't on her A game. Let's face it, these horses aren't machines. She doesn't take to the track, whatever. And she doesn't run her race that day. Swiss Skydiver, all of a sudden, finds herself in a pretty good position, although She Dares the Devil, who beat her in the Kentucky Oaks, will be in the Distaff. So now you got to turn the tables on that rival, which she's probably capable of doing. And how much did that Preakness Stakes take out of Swiss Skydiver? We'll see how she rebounds. She was on the track at Churchill this morning, just kind of doing some light work, nothing serious. But we'll see how she rebounds and bounces back out of that huge effort in the Preakness Stakes. But you can keep those responses coming at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Going to get to one final break. I'll come back and wrap it up for you. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and Odor! Caraconti!
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti, a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 132 and 4 fifths. Caraconti hails from the immediate family of leading sire King Mambo, with a top female line which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. Caraconti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes graded stakes winners Soleil Volante and Kenzai Warrior, along with stakes winners Carrick, Tornasol, Katil, and Great Winner. Recently, Spanish Love Affair rolled to an 11-length debut win at Gulfstream, value priced at just $10,000. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Caraconti at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, don't miss the October 10th issue of Blood Horse, which features the Preakness Stakes results and Blue Sky, Swiss Skydiver, beating the boys in the Preakness, a fifth classic for Windstar. Swiss Skydiver's breeder, Windstar, notches a fifth classic victory. Congratulations to them. Singular Sensation, owner Peter Callahan, goes national with the Phillies' Preakness victory. An experienced hand, talking about jockey Robbie Alvarado, who finds his way to the winner's circle with Swiss Skydiver. That article by Evan Hammonds. Download a copy of Blood Horse magazine and tablet today from the App Store or Google Play, or go to shop.bloodhorse.com. Well, my thanks to all of our guests who made this show possible today, including Michael Hernan, who kicked it off for us at 8:15 Eastern, Paul Espinosa from Charlestown, our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, Naomi Tucker, the Big A, Anthony Stabile at 9 o'clock Eastern, Brad Scott was with me at 9:20, and you heard the interview with Ken McPeak from Trainer Talk just a short time ago. Really appreciate all of them making this show possible. Don't forget, 4 o'clock Eastern today, exclusive radio coverage of the Jockey Club Gold Cup and the Flower Bowl. Anthony and Bobby Newman will take you through that coverage. 4 to 5, Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. 27 days, 2 hours, 30 minutes until the Breeders' Cup World Classic, World Championships, Breeders' Cup Classic 2. Yeah, I'm ready for it. Woo, we will be. 27 days, 2 hours, 30 minutes. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, and to Chauncey for handling all of our social media here this morning, and to everyone who took the time to weigh in on our poll question. Thanks for listening. Bring on the Eagles. Go Steelers.